Hello and welcome to this program, Shach Lay. I'm Bob Carswell. She robbed a car slack mish, as bevileam she was y'all to Gergis Shach Lay. In Shach Lay this time, Sikormach Shoje Shach Lay. Tashin Clash and Machion Del Yor. We hear of two recent publications. One is a book of poetry, Dreek Planet 2, Isle of Man, and we hear from Annie Kizik, Hazel Tear, and David Callan. And the other is on a subject which has a particular resonance this year, as we hear from Sarah Goodwins and George Hobbs of Lochton Books about strandings and sinkings, shipwrecks in Manx waters. First, then, we look at Dreek Planet 2. Here's Annie Kizik to tell us about that word, Dreek, and about the opportunity that came up. Hazel Tear explains something about what's involved.
Dreek is a word used generically to describe, well, perhaps all sorts of rather miserable weather, something damp. However, in terms of this poetry call, Dreek is the name of a publishing organisation run by Jack Caradoc in Scotland. And under that Dreek title, they publish all kinds of poetry, which is very well regarded in the poetry world, across the world, really. And Jack contacted David Callan, a well-known Manx poet. Jack asked David whether he thought there would be sufficient interest in the island, sufficient number of poets who would be able to contribute to a Manx version of a new series called Dreek Planet.
When we say connection to the Isle of Man, it doesn't have to be obvious. You know, you don't have to name somewhere and write about it. There have been other projects like that where poems about the Isle of Man have been published. But it can be just an inspiration. You know, if you were somewhere on the Isle of Man and it inspired the poem that you wrote, it can be that, loosely speaking, as long as there's some, you know, sort of connection with the island along the line somewhere.
Annie Kizik and Hazel Tear, two poets who were involved in collecting and editing poetry from the island for the publication Dreek Planet 2, Isle of Man. Dreek Planet 1 was India. Dreek Planet 2, Isle of Man is a collection of 37 poems. As Annie Kizik mentioned, the publisher Jack Caradoc of Dunfermline first contacted David Callan. And David, Annie and Hazel were the three guest editors of this book of poetry from the island. The first poem in the book is by David Callan, and here he is reading it as a guest poet at the launch in St George's Church in Douglas of a recent Isle of Man Poetry Society poetry trail.
It's called Here. It's about here, not St George's Church, but generally here. It's not Provence. I could not honestly, with nonchalance, aver a parallel between the scented world of Peter Mail, all lavender and longer dockery and swallow vaulted summers, and this bare rockery. But we have dodgy plumbers too in parish politics, replete with knavish tricks, and places for the fond heart to grow giddy in. Heather and gorse and hills and sea, through their slow sorcery, cast their spell over our mild meridian. Thank you.
David Callan and his poem Here, which is the first poem in the recently published collection Dreek Planet 2, Isle of Man, which is available now at £6. Tanaich yr beon er gerid, vis chit de gien mor airtus, gien rariach dun enesit, tar mach as an enes orpach as as a folosi cajin er isters. Van policy shen golsjach Rheinmach na tausen jay cochlein kind the east be stern lowit the royal, sight jer fist shen sach mechon de stocken ter marn. Henk tayach der rare and a yeast achten lyrish quota uns na nike jagus 3 feeders giant. Ernode wel jistern uns alien vanning, nistach sonnen goed smoo, jist schlig, nieris mus nike jagus quake jagus feed, hoyach ne rogen en smoo, esch ne min rogen en slew, wat goil uns meer in a taura, trevis burners jistach son rogenen. Her Renard Troggle Seuss quote can some kind genelia the east, mas o Renard Caller care the goil scathan the yeastelia, as a shen goil's jack nephrops the sort feebeg the rimach. Last year, for the first time in many years, Manx fishing boats had the opportunity to fish for larger quantities of herring rather than small amounts as a bycatch. Recently, it's been announced that Manx boats will also be able to take the small lobsters, which are called nephrops. Just this last week, the Office of Admiral of the Fishing Fleet has again been revived, with the Secretary of the Manx Fish Producers Organisation, Dr. David Beard, being installed by the Lieutenant Governor. Fishermen are amongst those who go down to the sea in ships, and the island has long had a reputation for producing fine seafarers. However, as we know from tragedies such as the loss of the Solway Harvester, the sea can be a dangerous environment, which has claimed its share of victims. A new publication by Larkton Books, Strandings and Sinkings, Shipwrecks in Manx Waters, looks at some of that maritime heritage. Sarah Goodwins and George Hobbs of Larkton Books tell us about it.
We have a history of borrowing old photographs from Ray Stanfield, who's got an amazing collection. He was very keen to do a shipwreck book. We liked the idea, but we didn't want to repeat what other people have done. There are other excellent books out there on shipwrecks, and because Ray is a big collector of old photographs, we thought, well, we'll concentrate on the old photographs. We and there aren't actually that many of shipwrecks. I mean, you can imagine, if your ship's going down, you're not posing for a selfie, so there are not many photographs of shipwrecks out there. So that's where where the book started, with the pictures, and then we put the words around it.
In a way, it's serendipity, I suppose. If a ship is stranded, there's probably a good chance that somebody will go down and take a picture of it, but it must have been difficult with some of the other ones.
Distinction between the strandings and sinkings. The sinkings, obviously, it goes down. Strandings are the boats that have usually been refloated. And we started from the premise, if we've got a photograph of it, regardless of what state it's in, and we've been very lucky, we've managed to borrow underwater photographs, the divers who have allowed us to borrow their photographs. We've got a gentleman who's allowed us to use some of his drone pictures, so we've got photographs of ships in coves that you can't actually get to unless you're either in an aeroplane or a drone or on the sea. And then George, my husband, went out and took other photographs of what's remains of the ship. So we must have a picture of it fairly widely. But yes, I mean, we've been very lucky. We've worked with a lot of different people. Unusually for this book, worked with a lot of different people. That's why it's taken longer, because people keep galloping up with excellent photographs and we have to keep rearranging it, or we had to keep rearranging it.
Well, finding the remains of the Sevic down at Port Laoghaire, then that's pretty well on the doorstep, but it must have been quite a job coordinating all the different photographs.
Yes, one of the difficulties, of course, is that you need to look at your tide tables and you need to think about when are the spring tides and when are they not spring tides. So, yes, you look for a nice day where the tide is in the right place and you can get there and you can actually see something, rather than it being just under the waves still. So, yes, there was a fair amount of extra walking and waiting and looking in order to get the modern pictures of the remains, if indeed there were any. The other photographs, Ray Stanfield has a large number of postcards. He also has a fairly interesting collection of otherwise acquired pictures, some of which were taken by himself or his son. You have the embarrassing ones where you have a ship which has been, incorrectly moored in the harbour in Ramsey. The tide goes out and it falls over. Obviously, it's recoverable in some sense, but in one of the particular instances, we have a picture of a ship fallen over in the harbour. And since the book came out, we have been looking at the work going on its demolition and scrapping on the wharf in Ramsey, which unfortunately we couldn't include.
Apart from the photographs, all the illustrations, then there's an awful lot of work gone into finding out what happened. So what were your sources for that?
Well, I was very lucky that I was loaned, Les Clark loaned me the the contemporary reports of the time, which are actually quite interesting because, as is today, the reporter at the time reported what he knew, which wasn't always accurate. It was interesting comparing the reports of the in the newspapers with the actual inquiries that went into how it went down, how whatever the ship went down afterwards. And I was also using things like the RNLI magazine, because they knew exactly what was going on. If they've got a boat out there trying to rescue people, they know what's happening. So it was quite interesting marrying these different reports together to get a reasonably good picture of what happened to each ship. It was very interesting, but it was a juggling act.
And with it being the 200th anniversary of the RNLI, of course, it's a very appropriate publication.
Yes, that was, I must admit, luck. But, well, not that the 200th anniversary wasn't, but the date of the publication was luck. But one of the things that I think people should remember about a book like this is, although the wrecks are fascinating, and they are, there was still quite a lot of loss of life. There would have been a lot more if there hadn't have been brave people in the RNLI going out to rescue them. But I think we shouldn't forget that, you know, there are occasions where wives lost their husbands, children lost their fathers. And I actually say so at one point. I don't want to labour it, but I actually say so in the book. You know, remember that some people died on these boats. There were also a lot of very heroic rescues by the RNLI, but also by the crews themselves. There was a number of instances where crew members risked their own life to save their colleagues, and where the captain of the ship thought the ship's going down and got his crew off onto the lifeboat. In actual fact, the ship, I'm talking about the Sulby River that collapsed on Ramsey Beach, the captain stayed with the vessel, but he got his crew off because he thought that we could be going down. There's a lot of really, really brave stories. There's also some idiocy as well, where the keg orbit was happily heading across Ramsey Bay, and the first officer, who was the only one on the bridge, went to the toilet. And the orbit ended up at Cranstall instead of going around the point of air. I mean, it's just idiocy. And there were one or two like that, but far more, well, heroism. I can't call it anything else. Well, the book is 1995. It's available from, well, throughout the island. Bridge Bookshops sell it both at Ramsey and Port Erin. The Manx National Heritage sell it through their shops. The book company have it. And there are one or two smaller retailers. For example, in Peel, Martin Bosher of the bookshop, he usually sells second-hand books, but he's selling this one new. There's Memorabilia in Ramsey. They sell it. There are a number of places. And, of course, you can also buy it through our online shop because we have a brand-new website.
Oh.
The old website became life expired and stuck. It worked, but we couldn't update it, which was a bit of a shame. And so we have a very helpful gentleman, Phil Dunn in Ramsey, who's helped us do a new one, which has been a complete nightmare. He has been brilliant, but I'm not very technologically savvy, so it's taken a while to get that up and running. But it is now, and hopefully it's future-proofed, I think is the word.
Sarah Goodwins and George Hobbs of Loughton Books, and their new publication, Strandings and Sinkings, Shipwrecks in Manx Waters. Mi hauna dach blaint a cultivanning cor quire slai, de chorstiach enmesachten son fair erlien a son podden, de gern aunder, rai bliene bananen. As the podden begged of Riunan, by Cochlein Shesha Culturoil Banning, Chit Kujach mean a nullic the Yenu Brunus, Lesh Fogram Achon Shen the Cajin, Jerry Gowry, so's the honour banning the Blean and Naw. Gedabel an Ounder Shen goes Jach Stauren, J. G. Moormara Banning, Manan and MacLear, a Jinnachul Lal an Ounder Eds, Unspeda, Ernaud de Veli Jintas Prash as Tefi Trom, as Homer Shen Taina Hyado Marmer du Polvesh. Sarah Goodwins mentioned other works about wrecks in Manx waters, and someone who's done a lot of research work in this area is Adrian Corkle, who's made his valuable database freely available to all through Manx National Heritage. As a result of his work, Adrian Corkle was recognised this year by the award of the Rai Blina Vananin for 2024. Vanaunder Shen, Rai Blina Vananin, Feed Hidus Keras Feed, Kurit de Adrian Corkill, Yoris Jonathan Hall, J. Eira Cheshunach Banning, Uns Teshpinus Uns Tai Mananin, Uns Pertni Hinja. Tan Teshpinus Enmesich, All at Sea, as te Gian Erach Mara Nalian, Golsjach Sign High Fo, Nova Maturich, Ach er lie er cochion the salient banning, rish nubis nish under the sashunach rioil, ne bed and sawelach, an RNLI. Vistil word elia j dechid blain, Melina, as a courager buns of lane hochid jeg as cares feed. Ve cuyesh drow an ounder, coils jach stouren mananen, curret de adrian corkel uns time mananen, as uns teshmanus for goils jach takerin, for en in ronsachel your adrian corkel. In talking about strandings and sinking shipwrecks in Manx waters, Sarah Goodwins said that some of these incidents included loss of life. But of course many included the saving of lives, thanks to the quick thinking or bravery of those on board, but also very much to the work of the Royal National Lifeboat Institution and its volunteer crews who devote so much time and effort to their altruistic humanitarian work. An integrated lifeboat service was what was proposed by Sir William Hillary 200 years ago this year. And Manx National Heritage's curator of archaeology, Alison Fox, talks about Sir William himself and his plans for the lifeboat service and about some of the incidents in Manx waters.
Sir William Hillary was a Manx resident in the early 1800s, 1820s. He was very much concerned about maritime safety. He took part in rescues himself. We have records of him jumping into the lifeboats, essentially, before the RNLI was actually formed, to go out and help people, specifically off Douglas, really, that had come into difficulty in their ships. He was resident on the Isle of Man and wrote that the establishment of a national institution for the preservation of human life from the perils of the sea has only suggested itself to me since my residence on a part of the coast often exposed to the most distressing scenes of misery. He wrote that in February 1823 in Douglas. So I think that puts the Isle of Man firmly at the heart of the beginnings of the RNLI. We are very fortunate to have a lot of records in the Manx National Archives that tell about these stories that from the newspapers from the 1800s, but also things like the shipping records, court records. So we have this amazing resource of things that were happening to people just around the Isle of Man, but also people who were just going by. And there's a phrase we often use, and the Isle of Man just got in the way. You know, we have these, the ships that were involved in the transatlantic trade in humans, you know, the slave trade. We have records of some of those ships being lost on their outward journey around the Isle of Man. We have records of ships on their way from Buenos Aires to somewhere in Europe, and they got wrecked at Ramsey, you know, all these, you know, these amazing stories, these amazing journeys. And that was one of the points that Sir William Hillary was very keen to stress, was that the assistance should be given without thought to where you were from, where you were going. You know, if you were in trouble at sea and you needed help, then that's what should happen. Hillary set down six pillars, really, that the RNLI should be based upon. And these include things like preservation of life, of course. You know, that's the top one. But also prevention of plunder. The Thorn, which was shipwrecked off Onken Head, that was wrecked with its cargo of booze, essentially. And there's some fantastic accounts in the newspapers of everybody flocking to this wreck site, and the customs officers like kicking over the barrels, and people were scooping up the alcohol with their boots and drinking out of their boots, and just amazing scenes of like drunken people parading from Onken Head down along Douglas Promenade. The Clan McMaster, which was lost in the Sound, and it's said that most of the homes in the south of the Isle of Man mysteriously acquired sewing machines after that wreck. Some very poignant stories as well. As I say, you know, that the main thing is about preservation of life. The figurehead of St. George. The story of the St. George rescue, you know, is incredible. It's, you know, that such rough seas, there was no hesitation about the local people going in and saving. You know, this massive cheer went up when everybody on board was saved, including a baby who was passed over in a carpenter's bag to the rescue boat. A lot of people know about the Lily, often called the Brig Lily, who unfortunately came to grief in the Sound, and there was this massive explosion, and a lot awful lot of people died in that. And it's really bring home the fact that, you know, people were dying and families were being left destitute. HMS Racehorse seems to have been the final straw for William Hillary. He saw the loss of life from the people from Castletown who went to rescue the naval crew who were on HMS Racehorse. Some of those rescue crew lost their lives and they left widows and children. And it was up to the local people to, you know, put a fund together to try and help those families financially. The HMS Racehorse is the only protected, legally protected wreck in Manx waters. And it was really the, as I say, it was the final straw really for William Hillary. It's an absolutely fascinating part of history, but it's also a part of history that the actual archaeological sites, if you like, of the shipwrecks are inaccessible to most of us. You know, I don't dive, most people don't dive. So it's really important, I think, for us to bring those stories up, even if people can't see the shipwrecks themselves, just so that they know they are all there, and they know a little bit about how they ended up there and the people who were on those boats. Just gold medal was awarded to Sir William Hillary for founding the RNLI. You know, we sort of talk about this this amazing institution that came out of tragedy, really. This person who was so determined to carry this forward. The pamphlet that William Hillary put together to convince, persuade people that we needed a national institution and the reasons why. One of the fascinating things about Sir William Hillary is that, you know, the pamphlet is, you know, it's not a huge thick tome, but it's so thoughtfully written, so very well considered, because he knew he had to convince the UK government to support this idea. Eventually, when it came down to it, the institution was, it's not government funded, but to get the support from very wealthy patrons, he had to get his message across. And, you know, he had to do this very, very thoroughly. And so writing, producing and printing at his own cost, this pamphlet was the, you know, the only way to do that, really. HMS Racehorse was lost in December 1822, and we know that the first edition of his pamphlet he was writing that winter. It was published February 1823, so, you know, significant loss of local lives as well as the crew from the ship, I think really spurred Hillary on. He'd taken part in rescues himself. He'd seen the dangers. Often when you're closest to the coast, that's the most dangerous part of the journey. You know, these ships, you know, they don't have brakes. You know, that there's no engines to help you. If you're driven towards the coast, then, you know, you're in real trouble. So he'd seen this time and time again. And we think that the loss of this particular ship and the effect it had on the local people from Castletown, who, you know, put their safety to one side and piled out to try and save these men, really set him off on this path that's, right, we really need to do something.
Manx National Heritage's Curator of Archaeology, Alison Fox, talking about Sir William Hillary, the foundation of the RNLI 200 years ago this year in 1824, and some of the island's maritime heritage. Shene by Shachle Hirsho, that brings us to the end of this edition of Shachle. So from me, Bob Carswell, Masovon Pin, Robert Akarslach, Sled New.